Joining us now on the line, we welcome Sarah Gonn. Sarah is the Head of Strategic Engagement at the Institute of Race Relations. Sarah, good afternoon to you. It's great to have you on board the show this afternoon. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you. Hi, Michael.
Great to have you on board, Sarah. Okay, so let's set the tone for the topic this afternoon. Now, we're looking at anti-Semitism, which, well, we know is a very sensitive and often emotionally charged issue, especially during these times of global tension, considering what has been transpiring as of late and before, for that matter. But now, Sarah, what we want to discuss is what you're observing in South Africa, both online and offline, and how also journalists can report on anti-Semitism responsibly without fueling fear. Over to you. What are your observations?
Well, you know, we have a fairly strong freedom of speech, and it applies to largely to journalists as well. So mm-hmm. I don't per se see any limitation on reporting on anti-Semitism. What you do get, of course, is fairly malign voices often saying things that are anti-Semitic or that accuse Jews of doing things, and they have to be reported on. I mean, we have the freedom to do it, and we have to go ahead and do that. I think one of the biggest unpleasantnesses is probably the fact that in reporting on it is the pushback you will get or the criticism you will get from the very voices that like to see, you know, any negative thing written or said about Jews, particularly if there's some way it can be linked to Israel or imputed, even if not directly linked. I don't see anything prohibiting it. It's just that I don't see very much about it. In other words, it's not an issue you actually see covered a great deal in South Africa, and it may have to do with the fact that, to a large extent, it's a very small community here, and it's a community that is alert to having moments of being besieged, and it defends itself generally fairly well in the press, irrespective of what people are trying to say about the community.
Okay, well, let's elaborate on that as a follow-up. Are there any specific emphasis on the word specific or noticeable differences between how anti-Semitism shows up digitally versus in physical communities, so to speak, within the actual communities themselves?
I think the thing is with digital, it's a little bit of a free-for-all, partly because you've got the sort of relative anonymity of pronouncing on something or saying something or writing something, that there's a bit of a shield between you and the audience that is receiving it or coming across it. So you will often find if somebody raises an issue pertaining to Jews or Jewish community, there will be comment that is unattractive and often ugly, but it's not. From a South African point of view, it's not resulted in anything more than often ugly, very ugly words and ugly comments.
Sure.
Whether it will stay that way, I think the example of what's just happened in Australia makes it up for grabs, because the problem with anti-Semitism, and particularly in the current climate, is that, you know, you don't need a sort of collective voice to perpetuate it. It can be very much acted upon by individual actors who have a philosophy or a sort of pet hate or obsession about it, and whether those people will actually go from the step of ugly words and comments to something more visceral and more physical, one can't predict. One can't discount it. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, it's something that you know, the anti-Semite world can, as I say, can take it into their own hands on a lone or on an organized basis.
Indeed, Sarah. I guess that what you've just mentioned now, perhaps we can just if you want to elaborate on this. You know, we have social media amplifying extreme voices. So the question begs, how much of what people are seeing online reflects real world behavior, and how much is distortion?
That's, look, by very, it's difficult to say in the sense that, the one of, ironically, the one advantage about being able to express yourself online and however you may choose to do so is it actually gives you an outlet for expressing feelings may in some way derogate from being taken to a further to a further extent. It's very difficult to say, to say whether what one hears online and one's forever seeing references to anti-Semitic comments and pronouncements being made online, being attacked and often being reported to the various service providers and sites to pull down or to bar. So that sort of interaction, people do use it, and sometimes they're successful and sometimes they're not. But the irony of it is being able to freely use the online world to express yourself both ways allows the opportunity for some redress to happen, or to express yourself back and to deny, lies or complete fabrications. But it's as I say, online is a very easy space to express things in relative. In relatively sort of slightly hidden kind of way, because you're not ex you actually go out yourself and expose yourself, whether it be on television or radio. That's much more risky, because that will attract opprobrium on a greater level. And in light of the sort of incidents that have occurred in Manchester and Australia recently, this does seem to be a real blowback against what is seen to be purely anti-Semitic crime, and nothing but, and no one's, no one who I think who wants to be heard outside of their own echo chambers will easily up that ante, because there has been such a blowback, and I think that's an important thing for us to, and it's important, and it's to some extent, I mean, it can't be entirely, but to some extent, there's some comfort to be taken in that.
Based on the observations you've just outlined to us, let's now focus on journalists themselves. Are there common mistakes? Have you pinpointed any that make that unintentionally heightened fear or tension?
Not that I can see offhand, in the sense I can't give you an exact example, but I think there's a tendency. One of the things I'd be critical of journalism in general, and it does happen here, is to take a side and, let's say, take a fairly anti-Israel position on something, and not act as truly as journalists to interrogate the issue and canvas the views and the comments of people on both sides of it, of a dispute in this regard. So you there's a tendency there, there's you tend to see a line of thought in some newspapers or media outlets that very clearly indicate a view, almost a personal view, on a situation where you can see that there has been no attempt to get the views from the other side. It's just verbatim taken a particular view and amplified it, or taken it off the wires, and left it at that. And that's quite difficult to come back at, because you've got to try and be heard, hope best by the outlets that have allowed this to happen in the first place.
Sure. You must be reading my mind, Sarah. Would you believe my next question to you was, perhaps we can just expand on it a bit more. The question is, how could now journalists strike the balance between raising legitimate concerns and avoiding alarmism based on what you're saying, personal views and, biased views?
Well, I think the part of it is responding both as individuals who see it and responding in fora that allow it, in the form of where you can comment or write letters or go on to radio stations to disabuse people of a notion. I mean, you obviously you can't always guarantee that you will be heard, but But theoretically, those spaces are open to do so, and certainly for sort of formal representatives of the Jewish community. And I think South Africa is fairly good at this, partly because I think we have had to be for a very long time, to make themselves heard, to issue press statements, to use media outlets to disabuse as best as possible. I mean, you've obviously, you know, rely on a certain amount of good faith to with the people who are expressing the views that you want to counteract, have control of the space. That's without a doubt. And also, there's a distinction between journalism, where you're just reporting facts, and it's incumbent upon you to, disclose facts on as wide a basis as possible around an issue that may be contentious one way or the other, and expressing an opinion. I mean, you can challenge an opinion, but at the end of the day, an opinion is still an opinion, and you're fully at liberty to challenge an opinion. But an opinion is something that somebody holds that is very difficult to say. You know, you can say whether you believe it is right or wrong for these or those reasons.
Right.
But that's in the realm of just using the best opportunity available to do so, and with as much authority as one can, depending on the circumstances of what's been said and who it's been said by. So if something is said by somebody fairly high up in,
right,
say, government or something like that, it's very much a role for people who have the authority to comment or represent, in this case, the Jewish community, to be alert to that. And I certainly, as I understand, the South African Jewish Board of Deputies is providing a service where anyone who believes that something has been said or published that's anti-Semitic can report it, so that the Jewish community here can try and get on top of and respond as much as possible, I imagine.
Sure.
To any allegation that is made that impugns Jewish behavior or a situation involving Jews.
Sure.
But I think generally one of the advantages, again, we face in South Africa is you're not dealing with a hugely, you're not dealing with a sort of majority of the society that is by nature anti-Semitic. Generally, South Africans are not, long may it last. And I think it's partly because we've had a very open media space, and also, you know, it's just people are not don't have a huge level of animus. It tends to be confined to certain areas and certain groups.
You mentioned now an open media space, Sarah. Just before we let you go, final question. What would you like listeners and journalists to remember when consuming or sharing news related to anti-Semitism?
I think what you need people to understand is that and this relates to whether it's anti-Semitism or an antipathy to any group of people, is not to attribute to the comments or the position of individuals do not attribute that to the larger group.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody does or says something that doesn't reflect well, one thing that's got to be borne in mind is that person representative of themselves, or are they speaking on behalf of the community?
Right.
And it is literally not to attribute to the group should be attributed only to the individual that's making the communication that should be challenged.
Guarding against generalization. Have I followed you correctly?
That's right.
Right.
Yeah.
There we go, Sarah. Sarah, we're going to have to leave it there. Before you go, we chatted the other day, so you're going on leave now. We're not going to be seeing you or hearing from you till the new year.
A couple of weeks, just to, I guess, do what most have to do is just refresh and get the juice is flowing again. And so just for the next couple of weeks I'll be off, and then from our point of view, bad news is good news because it gives you something to talk about. So
right.
We'll see what the new year presents us. The potential is always there for the worst possible scenario.
Of course, Sarah, what I'm asking is on behalf of all of us, on your, from your colleagues, blessings during this time of Hanukkah and, of course, the festive season, and everything of the best for 2026. Sarah, thank you so much.
And to you all.
For joining us on today's show. Sarah Gons, the Head of Strategic Engagement at the Institute of Race Relations.